Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
In hindsight now, I would say I am 99.9% sure Fred Lamb murdered Shelley.
Previously on The Coldest Case in Laramie.
You could literally see the flames coming out of the door, and I don't even remember him sticking his head out the door to look over.
Somebody mailed me a card with a $100 bill in it and said, if you're smart, you'd leave town. They think it was probably Fred that did that.
The detective who was in charge of it now is not somebody who was originally a police officer at the time. He's not from Laramie.
And what's his name?
His name is Robert Terry.
Turn left onto Wyoming 130 East, Wyoming 230 East.
We drove into Laramie just before Easter, my first time back in decades. It was a strange sensation to drive through this place that had been frozen in my memory. I tried, but mostly failed, to restrain myself from pointing out all the landmarks I remembered to Jasmine, my friend and road trip partner. The old houses I'd lived in as a teenager. Stink Lake. The construction pit where my old high school had been torn down, a fitting into that place as far as I was concerned. I started slow, working around the edges. I was wary about rolling into town in a new red Prius with New York plates and handing out my New York Times business card. That kind of combination can work against you in Wyoming. I needed some time to adjust to the elevation, get the lay of the land.
I wonder if one of these was like Foster's, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was in this area.
Turn left into Wyoming 130 East.
This would be the area that a truck stop would be.
Lori and Brandy flew in from California. We had dinner at the home of Vicky, Lori and Shelley's mom. Lori showed us around the outside of Shelley's old apartment.
And that was her bedroom window. That would have been like where her bedroom window was right there. And Michelle's was on the back side. And then the other living room window was right here.
So when Shelley's apartment had been turned into a garage. The other four apartments in the building had been renumbered and repainted, a cheery blue instead of a dingy brown. The whole town had a bit of a makeover, really. Foster's had been torn down and turned into a sprawling Exxon truck stop. The new high school had a gleaming football stadium and an actual running track. Just off Grand Avenue, there was, improbably, a vegetarian restaurant. After we spent Easter weekend with Shelley's family, Jasmine and I hit the library.
I've got the Laramie Daily Boomerang microfiche from October 19th to December 13th, 1985. That's a good picture of her.
Yeah. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah. She was very sporty.
Right.
Shelley's murder barely registered in the local paper.
But again, that's not a jump. That's it.
That's it. Five paragraphs.
Hi.
I don't want to interrupt you if you're in the middle of numbering.
I'll help you.
So if I'm looking for court records, is this where I come?
Well, if it's for a felony, a probate,
a trip to the courthouse was also kind of a dead end. We ran Fred's name through the court system, and the only thing that popped up was a traffic ticket. If Shelley's family hadn't kept a few of the court documents, like the old search warrant for Fred, and a list of witnesses who were expected to testify, I wouldn't have had any paper trail. The record of the murder charge had been fully expunged.
The mailbox is full and cannot accept any messages at this time.
I called old police officers, Shelley's friends, everyone on the list of witnesses. Really anyone in Laramie who is even tangentially related to the investigation.
Hi, this is Stephanie. Please leave your message. Thank you.
I left a lot of messages.
Hi, Stephanie. My name is Kim Barker, and I'm actually a reporter with the New York Times. I'm calling you on Thursday afternoon at about 12:30.
I'd been in Laramie a week before I built up the nerve to call Detective Robert Terry, the man who was in charge of the investigation. I was, truthfully, avoiding it. If he didn't want to talk, this story would be a lot harder to pull off. I didn't see how I could figure out what was happening in this investigation if nobody doing the actual investigating would talk to me. I'd been through this many times before. I would call and get the typical police line in this kind of situation. Open case, no comment. But I'd keep reporting and come back a little later. Just checking in. I'd be persistent, but respectful. A buzzing fly with good manners. Eventually, with a little luck, I would wear him down. But it would be a careful dance. A delicate game of cat and...
Police Department. Terry?
Is this Robert Terry?
Yes, it is.
Hi. I don't know if I call you Assistant Police Chief or Mister. Which do you prefer?
It doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, my name is Kim Barker, and I'm actually a reporter with the New York Times. And I'm in Laramie right now. And I'd love to be able to talk to you about a case I know that you've worked on pretty hard over the last decade or so. Involving Shelley Wiley.
Right.
I'm actually in Laramie. I'm from Laramie. I went to high school here. I was actually in my sophomore year. In 1985, she was killed. And so I've just, like, always found it... It was a... I mean, you weren't here, but it was a horrific time in Laramie, and I've always just been curious what's happened with the case. And so is there any way we could meet in person and just sort of talk about what we're doing?
I don't mind meeting with you in person, but I can't really speak a lot about the case because it's still open.
Uh-huh.
I can sure discuss some of the things that are already divulged.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be perfect.
You know, maybe just get to know each other, but I mean, yeah. I really can't speak about some of the things we're doing.
I know you can't talk about things that are going on behind the scenes, but like just right. About the stuff that's been in the public. And I know, I mean, I know you've been very personally invested in the case. And so, I mean, according to the family, you're like the person that they've come to depend on. So, like, to talk a little bit about that, because it doesn't really have anything to do with anything ongoing, you know, because it's nice to have, like, considering who was arrested, you know, to have a positive police officer involved, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, sure it does.
Okay.
You want to come to my office, or...?
Yeah, I'd love to come to your office. When would work for you?
How about now?
Take a minute to check your social battery. How's it doing? It's easy to ignore our needs and spread ourselves too thin. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/serial today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/serial.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building, find an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
We can move these papers, sorry. Everything just piles up.
Here we go. So, right. If you could start by introducing yourself.
Sure. My name is Robert G. Terry, and I'm the Assistant Chief for the Laramie Police Department in Laramie, Wyoming.
And so, talk about this case. How did you come to this case?
So, this case is probably the most prolific case in Laramie, and it never was solved. And Laramie has a few cold cases that we've worked on over the years, but this is one that a lot of officers had looked at and done some work on. It's by far the most worked case in the history of the PD as far as hours and manpower. And this was one I really wanted to take a peek at. And so we pulled all the case files out and went through what we had in evidence, which...
So when they bring you out the reports and you're starting to dig into this, I mean, are we talking this much, like a foot and a half, 2 feet? Like, how much, like, are you looking at? I know a lot of it was on microfiche, so maybe right. It's just like a few microfiche cards.
So kind of how it worked is people before me had printed them all off. And print them off, you know, three-hole punch them and put them in notebooks. So it started off with two, like, large, well, they're right there, actually, those blue ones that say one and two. Oh. They were just like that. Oh. So
you've got them right wow. here.
Yeah. I've lived with these for 11 years.
Both those two.
Just the two blue ones were what is, were what were put together kind of prior to me. And that included all of the written police reports to that point.
And you keep them here?
I keep them with me, yeah.
So back in the beginning, they didn't talk a lot about the blood. They just said there was a lot of blood. And I know from the one piece of paper I was able to get was...
the affidavit?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The search warrant and your affidavit. But it talks about the blood going down these two doors. And was there a handprint or was there blood on that door that was two doors down from Shelley Wiley?
So the blood evidence between the apartment complexes, you know, is primarily between apartment 3 and 1. Hers being 1, the apartment where Fred Lamb was staying, number 3. So there was blood evidence on number 3 and then on the sidewalk leading to and into number 1. So we know our crime scene, at least that portion of it, is in there, from there to there. So and lots of it. There's a lot of story there.
The story, as Detective Robert Terry told it, was pretty simple, if a little vague. He said that when he first started poking around the case, he looked through all of the evidence and read through all of the police reports. Basically, the write-ups of the interviews the police did in 1985. Right after the murder. Terry said he got interested in Fred Lamb for several reasons. Fred was there, but his reason for being there seemed odd for a guy with a family. Terry thought it was suspicious that Fred, a former cop, didn't immediately respond when he heard a commotion outside. Fred was interviewed by police the day of Shelley's murder, but that interview seemed a bit cursory and strange to Terry. Finally, biggest of all, when Terry sent out cheek swabs of possible suspects to see if they matched with any of the DNA found at the crime scene, he got a match for Fred Lamb.
So what ties the DNA of Fred Lamb to Shelley Wiley?
I can't tell you all that. But obviously we have blood evidence of Fred in that crime scene. So that's really all I can tell you. Which says a lot, really. I mean, that's almost too much, but... That's really it. We know that he was there. I mean, we saw him there that morning. It's not it, like the whole point of this is like this homicide is not very difficult. It's just not. I would hope, you know, knock on wood, this doesn't happen. But if it happened today, I've always said this. I believe that the outcome would be much different, just because of the way that we're trained and how we do things. But it wasn't. It's not complicated. You know what? I've talked to some of the guys, and you know, some of them aren't alive anymore that were there. Everybody knew. I mean, he worked with them. Fred worked with everybody at that scene. You know, and not only that, but was in the guard. And I mean, that's like a friend. So you're showing up, and your friend's there, and you're kind of like, well, that doesn't make much sense. But yet, surely. People that I work with wouldn't be responsible for something like this. So the dynamics and the culture and the friendships and everything just it made things more difficult, and it had to have been extremely hard for the officers because they were uncomfortable. And they would never have thought that somebody that they knew and worked with, especially as a police officer, would be involved. But
so there's some match that comes back that you can't discuss, but it implicates Fred with you know, DNA evidence. Mm-hmm. What happens after that?
So we go back and listen to his interview. He tells them about said piece of evidence, and it's like, holy fuck. Like, excuse my language for whoever's listening to this, but Like, seriously, he told him about it in 1985. It just goes back to that dynamic of the relationships. Like, oh, okay, Fred, thank you. We'll get a hold of you later. I mean, just didn't do anything with it.
What was he like? Like, you might find my blood there because I was putting a screen back in or something like that.
Yeah, always has a reason for anything. You know, like, he knows. He knows what they're going to ask. And he told them what he wanted them to know. And just made them super uncomfortable. And that's how it ended. Just, that's it. Okay. Thanks, Fred. See you later, buddy. Let me know when you get back. We'll go have a beer. Like, kind of thing, you know? It's just like me talking to one of my friends. And there's no... That's why we're here. Now, almost 40 years later. So...
Can you talk about where the case stands now? Just as much as you can say.
Yeah, I mean, the case is still active. I need a new prosecutor. I'm still working with Peggy's office to get that accomplished. And then move forward with our plan. We want to take this to trial. We just got to have a prosecutor assigned and somebody that wants to do it. And COVID needs to let up on our restrictions for courtroom. The jurors need to see this. They have to see it. The family has to be there. Maybe not all of her family, but a lot of them want to know. They deserve that. And it's the time is running out. I mean, that's just the sad part of it. You know, people are getting old and people are passing away. You know, the cops are passing away. The families are passing away. And eventually Fred's going to pass away. And that's the biggest worry of the whole thing. It's like, are we going to miss, you know, our opportunity to hold him responsible? Now, we know who did this. We just have to prove it.
Fred sent word that he didn't want to talk. But his lawyer, Vaughn, he had a lot to say.
When Judge Sanford became a judge, I got all drunk and I started giving Terry and all the cops a bunch of shit. And there was some of this going on. And I was telling them what a bunch of putzes they were for having the wrong guy.
Ask you just to identify, say what your full name is and what you do for a living.
Vaughn Howard Neubauer. I'm a criminal defense attorney.
So when you go to law school, do you want to do defense law?
I wanted to be a public defender. I've always hated the death penalty. I've never liked the cops. I hate authority. I wanted to be a public defender. And I would, if I wouldn't have gotten fired, I'd still be one. But... There you have it. After my second daughter died, I had a very bad year. I got arrested 4 times in 1 year, and they let me go.
Oh, my God. Number one, your second daughter died?
Yeah. They were both stillborn. But, yeah. But we got 2 boys.
That's good. But that had to be really... And so you were working as a...
I had a stressful time.
So you're a public defender, your second daughter dies, you mess up a few times, and, they fire you, and then you go and you hang your own shingle out. Is that about it?
That's about the way it worked, yeah.
Okay. And had you had any of your big cases before then?
All the death penalty stuff was as a public defender. Also did the Bush case, which was a 20-year-old cold homicide. You know, cold cases don't happen all that often. I've done, for Wyoming, I've done a significant number of cold homicide cases, though.
How many would you say you've done?
Eaton, Bush, Bean, Lamb, 4, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a lot for Wyoming.
For Wyoming it is, yeah.
Yeah. So talk about how you got involved with the Lamb case and how you first heard about it.
They called me. I don't know how they got my name, and they hired me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then what happens?
Boy, we were ready to go, and they dismiss, claiming that they had to get other evidence tested. Now, this was a 20-some-year cold case, and the way these work is every time somebody gets promoted to detective, they're handed all the cold cases. So every new detective since 1985, has had this case. Every piece of physical evidence has been tested. There was nothing left to retest. And they dismissed saying they needed to get evidence tested some more, which was not even true. There's nothing left to retest.
They're out of blood.
They still have the swabs from the door where Freddie was. And just because some of Fred's blood was on a door two doors down, I always failed to see the significance of that.
And they had nothing inside the apartment.
Yeah, I mean, her bot, and there was enough left to identify her. You know, she wasn't completely consumed by the fire. And the fire really only did the living room. Lots of the bedroom, the kitchen, lots of stuff in that survived. And they collected, you know, bed sheets. I can't remember what all else, but there was nothing to connect Fred Lamb with the inside of that apartment. They found a bloody matchbook cover with a fingerprint on it.
Like a palm print or something?
Yeah, kind of like that. I don't know if any of this is in my electronic files or not. Now, Fred said I could talk to you. If it's not in here, I mean, because there was so much, I don't know if we put it in the electronic files or not. It's in storage, or either over at 6th Street or in our storage locker, I reckon.
That'd be great.
I can go find it.
Yeah.
But again, it's a cold case. I mean, the DVDs are that high. There's a lot of stuff.
Happy to look through that with you if you're amenable to that.
Sure. Boy, okay, so we do have it.
It's thinking. That's
yeah,
all.
It got mad at me.
Made it do a lot at the same time, to be fair. But yeah, let's go back to talking and then we can look at some stuff. So you get involved, you get all this discovery, you start going through it, and you're working with somebody it's been a very long time. I don't know, is his mind all there? Does he remember that night?
Yeah, you know, Fred's he's a simple man, but no, his memory's good. I mean, he remembers going to sleep. He remembers some kind of commotion. He looked out the window, and then there's people banging on his door saying there's a fire. You know, that's what Fred remembers. Mm-hmm. And so he's a guy, you know, he really thought that the police were coming to scratch his brain to see if he could have any insights, you know. 7 hours. He didn't see it coming. And they confronted him with all these lies about what the physical evidence was. And after 7 hours, the most Terry could get Fred Lamb to admit, he got him to admit that, yes, I agree that the great weight of the evidence points towards me. He'd never had a speeding ticket. The one and only crime he's ever been charged with is first-degree murder.
I'm assuming that would have been your defense had you gone to trial.
It would have been both a negative defense, Fred didn't do it, and we had an alternate suspect that we thought we could have put pretty big meat on. Now, I don't know if the Boomerang ever had this. Before the fire department got called, some Hispanic male came in and bought gas. I think this is at the fly store. They did a composite sketch of him, and it sure looks like Larry Montez's junior year, high school yearbook photo to me. I know Larry did it. He did it. I mean, it was pervy as hell. That night, Larry, he had a crush on some teenage girl up in Rock River. He drove up there in the middle of the night, went into her house. I don't think he had to break in. They probably had the door open, but sat there and watched her sleep for like an hour. And he left Rock River in plenty of time to get back down here and do this. Yeah.
And Larry Montez's name, it's never been like made public.
No, they dragged Fred through the dirt. And yeah. I mean, he went to prison for being a child molester, you know, but
Larry did.
Larry did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he died in prison.
Right, yeah. Right. So what is your impression of how that scene was handled from the very beginning and, like, the evidence collection and, like, what the police did?
You know, I'm not a cop, but I do know they like to keep a track of their witnesses in the early stages of an investigation. They had a very racist response. They'd gotten information that Shelley Wiley had an African-American boyfriend, and maybe she had a preference for African-American males. And, oh, my God, did they turn this town upside down looking for African-American males?
In talking to her family, they also talk about all the rumors that were being spread about Shelley at that point, you know?
Terrible.
Vic blaming her, you know?
She had it coming. She was flirting with guys at the truck stop. She was going out with African Americans. She had to be a slut, you know, because of that, you know. I mean, no morals whatsoever. Didn't she think something like this was going to happen to her? Yeah, there was lots of that. There was, yeah.
You think they're at all investigating anything now?
They did a search warrant on Fred less than a year ago. Me and Fred had to go get a whole nother set of complete handprints taken. And they're not going to show anything because Fred was asleep. I mean, I don't know all the killers, but I've met a lot of killers. If Fred Lamb's a killer, I'll kiss your ass on Main Street.
Did they give you any of the old audio of the initial investigation? Yeah, like the interviews?
Let's see what's this. These are from 2009. That's from 11. Here's one from 1985. Three discs. It's on video even.
You do have this that connects to there.
Mm-hmm.
So we can just bring over a hard drive.
Yeah.
And that works, right?
Yeah.
Looks like they're all there.
Okay.
You got some nighttime reading.
Over the years, I've had lawyers show me documents they believe will persuade me of their client's story. I've had lawyers give me depositions that never made it into a court file. I've gotten redacted police reports through public records requests. But I've never had a lawyer hand me everything they've gotten in discovery, all the police and lab reports, and basically say, have at it. I was confused about why Vaughn made the offer and suspicious about whether he would actually give me the entire file or just the stuff that made his client look innocent. It was hard to know how seriously to take Vaughn. He told me that the only DNA they found of Fred was at the door of apartment number 3, the information that Terry was being tight-lipped about. But was that true? I could already sense him trying to sell me on the Larry Montez thing. I was skeptical. Felt pretty damn convenient to blame the murder on a sex offender. And a dead one, no less. When Vaughn ended the interview that day, he said we'd hit beer o'clock. We headed over to the Buckhorn, the oldest, weirdest bar in Laramie. Vaughn's favorite. Jasmine and I drank more beers than we should have. Over the next few days, we circled back and grabbed all of the case files. I sat at Vaughn's office computer, sandwiched between art prints of Che Guevara and Cheech and Chong, making sure I got everything. It was a fire hose of reporting material. I'm pretty sure Vaughn thought that once I reviewed it all, I'd have to come to the conclusion he'd been paid to come to, or at least paid to defend. That there was no way Fred Lamb committed this murder.